Welcome to 12 Scholars, a brand new podcast dedicated to personal development. In this first series, we meet 12 inspiring people, all with a bias for being proactive. To learn more about personal development and how you can take your performance to the next level, visit our website and click the button to subscribe. In this week's show, we meet Ben Grimes. Ben is customer journey analyst at one of the fastest growing online retailers in Europe.
When I was growing up, all I wanted to be was a Formula One driver because I thought they are the best sports people, the fittest in the world. Four. Okay. Well, there's a new target. Yeah, I can do this. Turns out, like, no, you can't. Give it a go. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But at least now you know that that didn't work.
Since joining AO, Ben has completed a number of physical and mental challenges that have pushed him to the absolute limit. Today, he draws on that experience to help others become more proactive and develop a can-do attitude. In this episode, we discuss mental resilience, training for a triathlon, what it's like working for AO, and why climbing the highest mountain in North Africa changed his life forever. We start the episode by asking Ben what he remembers about his first day working at AO.
That would have been 2011, Valentine's Day, 2011. That's how I remember it.
How do you remember about joining AO?
Oh, because I got all them cards on the first day. No, it's just the date, and That's how I remember when it was.
For listeners, just talk us through what AO was back in the day. You know, it was called DRL. As a company, you know, how would you describe the company at the time?
Yeah, so the company was founded on a £1 bet, where John Roberts, one of the founders, he thought he could sell kitchen appliances online because he wasn't very happy with how it was done in the high street. And he was bet £1 that you couldn't do it. Years later, he kind of went and got that done. So almost like to prove his friend wrong, went and did it. The internet had only first like come around a couple of years before, so it wasn't really set in stone like we use it today. So it was like revolutionary almost.
And for those who are new to AO, you know, the business model at the time was to become the Dixons of the internet.
Yeah, it hadn't been done before. You know, when you're shopping on the high street and you'd have to go into one shop and you might see something you like and it's that price. You have to walk on the other side of the high street all the way up the road, go and see the price in that shop to find it was cheaper and go all the way back down to go and get it from there. It might be a Saturday morning in rainy Bolton, you got to go and do that, where you'd much rather stay inside in your pajamas and like go and browse online. It's just more convenient. And John had kind of recognized that's the way things are going, and you can cut out all that middle cost by getting the goods straight from the supplier and
cut out all the overheads.
Yeah, that's it, to pass the savings on to the customer.
What inspires you to be so proactive today?
When working at AO, still DRL back then, we did lots of things for charities. And one of them was to climb Mount Toucal, which is in the Atlas Mountain, Morocco, for charity. So I'd not been working at the company that long. Some of the guys had just come back from doing Kilimanjaro. I was like, wow, that's amazing. Like, never really done anything like that before. Wouldn't it be great to be one of those people that gets to go? So there was only six places. So put my name down, thought, got to be in it to win it. I think a couple of weeks later, I got the email to say, like, you're one of the people. So it's like, this is fantastic. So did lots of training. Eventually, we went to kind of do the actual event and kind of done some practice walks and things. Not really that fit. I've always been like relatively fit, but not super fit. On the day we got to the summit, I used all my energy to get up there. And just before getting to the top, I was done. Like, body was... I was not able to control, so tired, not able to control my own emotions. So just crying everywhere for no reason, couldn't understand why.
How many days was the expedition?
So the expedition was, we get to Morocco, then we'd have one day hiking to our sort of base camp. And that's just like normal terrain, so like paths and things like that. One day doing the practice walk and like skills with ice axes and crampons. Then the day to do the full ascent, come back down, another sort of walk the day after, then go back down. So 5 days.
So talk about the ascent then and kind of what happened on that particular day.
So the ascent, we were around about 3,000 metres, maybe just under. That was our base camp. There was one room that had a fire in it and everyone slept in one room. The toilets were almost non-existent, just a hole in the ground. So it's horrible. So all week I'd been like not going in there. On the morning, we'd gone and had our porridge, our fuel to get up to the summit. Couldn't hold it any longer. I thought, I've got to go. And the smell, yeah, I ended up throwing up everywhere. And then we were off. We got to go. So no time to kind of get anything else to eat. Set off in the pitch black with head torches. I had my Mars bars with me. So as my energy was going, I was throwing those down just for fun. And then, yeah, I expended probably too much energy. Looking back, it's easy to say. Wanted to enjoy the trip as well, but didn't pace myself. So, yeah, when I got near the top, air's getting thin. Everything's harder. Bonked, yeah.
Very emotional then, you, towards the top.
Yeah, didn't have enough energy to kind of just control my emotions. So then when we were, like, getting ready to go back down, it was, like, pretty clear that I was really tired and, you know, like, sat down on this like mini wall and like really struggling to kind of get back up.
And for somebody who was kind of relatively fit at the time, how did you react to those kind of situations?
Yeah, fitness is a strange thing, isn't it? Because you can be a really fast runner over a short distance, but then you might not be able to kind of climb a massive mountain. And that's kind of where I'd see myself. So I kind of thought, yeah, I should be able to do this. Quite young then, about 22, 23, so a little bit cocky and, yeah, I can do this. Turns out, like, no, you can't. And when people give you advice, when they've been there, they've done that, you really do need to listen to what they're saying because they're saying it for a reason.
I can imagine lots of highs and lots of lows on that expedition.
Yeah.
What did you actually learn about yourself?
You've got a limit, like a safe limit, but then you can go beyond that. And on this trip, I had to go beyond that, but also like mental resilience and how strong you can be where, you know, there was no option to stop. So we're up a mountain, like 4,000 meters. The sun was starting to go down. It was snowing. And we had to get back because it's not just me. There's the guides there. So you just have to go on. You can't stop. How you convince yourself to do that, it builds a lot of, I think, character and resilience.
So character building, and I'd imagine, you know, can't do isn't a word, you know, on an expedition like that.
Yeah, no option. I was tied to the guide just in case I passed out, I don't slide down the mountain. So that when that happened, when they told me that was going to happen, I was really, I suppose, like a little bit embarrassed that I've caused this to happen. And then it sort of dawned on me how dangerous this was. They didn't trust that I could control like myself. So yeah.
What an opportunity, though, to, you know, go out there at such a young age with work.
Yeah, fantastic. But yeah, that really was, I'll remember that and that feeling that was really low and a very strange place to be. It almost like it wasn't real when you're going back down and someone's talking to you to give you encouragement and you can feel the energy leaving your body because you're having to listen to them, that energy it takes. That's really weird, so since then, I've not wanted to be that person in anything that I do.
Since the Atlas Mountains, you've taken on a number of other challenges. Perhaps you could talk about some of the highs and lows of those as well.
Yeah, so another one we did was the Coast to Coast bike ride for another charity that someone organised in work. I'd never really done any cycling, but I'm quite a slim, almost got the right build for it. And I thought, you know what, I think I could be all right at that. So I want to join in, I want to give it a go and see if I can do it. And that worked out really well. So then the next year we did John O'Groats to Land's End joggle. That was even more, that was insane. The challenge of that, so it was just under 1,000 miles in 9 days. From doing the mount to Carl and not wanting to be that kind of guy again, and other people from my team there had really helped me like get back down. I wanted to be really fit so I could enjoy it and then someone who could help other people as well. So did loads of training for that. So when we got there, I could be that guy so I could help take a turn at the front to make it easy for the people in the slipstream. I could be that guy to help someone change a puncture. And like it's just a good like all-round team effort to help everyone complete it together.
From taking on the cycling of Land's End John O'Groats, you've now become a fully-fledged triathlete.
Yeah, so I think it was in 2013 after we'd done Jodgrot's Landing, or Joggle as we called it. Come back and a friend was saying, you know, you've done all this challenge, and at that stage it was, well, what else can we do now? Like, what's going to beat doing something like that? When I was growing up, all I wanted to be was a Formula One driver, because I thought they are the best sports people, the fittest in the world. But then one of my sisters always told me, no, it's Tour de France cyclist. So unfortunately, I'm a bit old now to be a Formula One driver, but you can still go out and do cycling. But then my other friend had said, oh no, it's like a triathlete, because they do swimming, they do the cycling, and they do the running as well. So I've said, why don't you give that a go? I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm good at cycling because I've just done all that, so I'm quite fit, but I'm not too sure on the swimming. So this was just the Wilmslow Sprint Triathlon at this stage. And this was 400 metre swim, 20 mile bike ride, and then a 5K run at the end. So a good beginner one to take part in. So I was like, I don't know if I can do it because I'm not really a good swimmer. And it was tough because I've already just signed you up. You owe me £35. So that was good that for someone to push my boundaries and get me to be uncomfortable, I suppose. And then, yeah.
So your first Ironman was then 2015?
That's right. I remember kind of getting the training plan off the internet on the Ironman website. And I was itching to get going because I wanted to. It's a big challenge, as you know. Like, I need to start like now. So first couple of weeks, like, started them early, got into it and just loved it. Didn't know if I could do it or not. So the first goal on that was to finish. Kind of as the training went on, I had a target time in mind. Thought that would be great if I could get that. Everything was going up really well. And then the big day came. Got in the water, one lap of Pennington Flash. Thought, if I've done this within 40 minutes, great. Got out, looked at the watch, 35, brilliant. I'm 5 minutes up. Next lap, I took it a bit easier. Did the ride, that was good. The run with everybody there cheering you on was brilliant. Got to the finish line. My target time was 12 hours 30. I got there and it was 12:34. I was like, oh no. Oh, so I've just done my first Ironman. And I was absolutely gutted because I'd set myself that target that I knew was achievable, and I'd not hit it, only to find that, yeah, I had 12:34 was from when the pro set off, which was 10 minutes before. So all of a sudden, from feeling disappointed and gutted, then I knew I'd beat my target by about 5 minutes. So I was very happy.
So that was 12 and a half hours.
Yeah.
So for a lot of people, 12 and a half hours of exercise is a long time.
Yeah.
So talk to us a bit about how this can do and proactive attitude kind of helps you for those 12 and a half hours.
Yeah, you kind of, so when I was up Mount Toucal and you have to get down, you've got no other option. In my head, I'd signed up to do the Ironman. So there was no option to not do it. And then in my head, I'd told myself that target time, so I couldn't relax, had to keep going. And that's what got me through the training. So the race itself is just going through the motions of the event and the day, the getting up early, going to do a swim, going out for a 5 mile run. That's where it's hard because you've not got anyone cheering you on. So you've got to remember the end goal and what you're doing it for, what you're trying to achieve. And that makes it a lot easier, and almost an element of the unknown as well. Like, you don't know whether you can do this, so you've got to really make sure you put the effort into to get there.
And not resting on your laurels, actually putting in the work beforehand.
Yeah.
And make sure that you're prepared for the actual race day.
Yeah, that's right. So I'd done a handful of triathlons before, but not a lot. So the training was just really important. Going out, getting the miles in, rain or shine. Yeah, and just got to get on with it.
So that was the first Ironman.
Yeah.
So talk us through what was that decision making to actually then spur you on to do another Ironman 2 years later?
So it was about 6 months of training, minimal social life. I think I gave up drinking for 6 months. So it's a big commitment. You miss out on like social events. So the year after, I took a year off and recovered my life, and then watched it. So in 2016, watched the Ironman and thought, you know, I need to do that. I need to do it again and then try and improve. So yeah, I've done it, but I know where you can get improvements, and kind of when you go back and look at it, you know, oh, I could have saved like 5 minutes here. If I'd have done this, if I'd done it like this instead, that would have saved me time. And then quite competitive. So I know someone else is doing it. I have to beat them.
this whole competitive spirit always wanted to spur you on, do better, and always, you know, beat other people.
Yeah, that's it. It's hard for me to understand someone who's not competitive, but not everyone's the same. But for me, you just want to, you want to be better than someone. I suppose it's you trying to prove that you're good.
Throughout your exploits, either in the mountains, on the bikes, or doing the traveling, has there any person that's, you know, stood out and inspired you along the way at all?
There's not really one person that's inspired me. You get like inspired by lots of different people. So yourself have done an Ironman. So it's good to four. Okay. Well, there's a new target. So yeah, it's good. Like the people just doing it on the day and watching them, like, you kind of see them, if they can do it, I can do it. And it's great that it's like your hometown, all the people come out and watch, but it's just people like achieving things and kind of think, you know, I can do that, or I can achieve something as well. And then there's people that you know, so as you start getting into it, you get to meet more people that have done it and they have their own targets and things like that, and people can like get really good performance, and yeah, it's, I suppose it's pretty inspirational.
You kind of get swept up in it, don't you?
Yeah, you do. The kind of, the more attention you give it, the more interested you become in it. So yeah, you get really wrapped up in it, and yeah, it's crazy.
I'm always fascinated by corporate culture and how it kind of sets the tone. So perhaps you could talk to me about DRL and when you first joined, what was that culture like in the early days?
Nothing ever stood still. So like one week could be totally different to the next. We had this buzzword, which was DRL DNA. So if you knew someone that had DRL DNA, that's the person we need to work at our company, where they kind of, they're hardworking, you know, they got the right values, they're made of the right stuff. And that's what it was like. It was a lot of fun. And while it was a small company, you could influence that change. So it was an exciting time, really.
How would you describe your current role and how having this proactive attitude and can-do nature, how does that help take the business forward?
So my current role at AO is customer journey analyst, and I'm given the freedom to analyse what might have gone wrong and suggest ways to improve it, really trying to drive that performance so we're doing the best for our customers. I'm quite competitive, so I always want to improve on that. And we're given like the freedom to suggest things and kind of look at new programs as well that might help us achieve that goal.
And how would you cultivate others to develop this can-do attitude?
I think because we're given the freedom to kind of make our own decisions, we put a lot of trust in people, so trusting in the work they do, we can really encourage them to suggest something. You can't just take what's happened in the past will always be the same. You always need to look for new ideas and new ways of doing things. What might have been done a year ago might not necessarily be the correct way to do something next week. So it's constantly reviewing things, always looking for new ideas and new solutions. And that's what the company's always been really good at, like encouraging and promoting.
One of the really striking things about AO is your simple logo of an A, an O and a smiley face. So perhaps you could talk to us a bit about what that means to you and what that means to people working there.
Yeah, it's really just trying to make customers happy, delight customers with our service. And these kind of two rules really that in customer service that we follow, and that's treat every customer like your gran and do things that would make your mum proud.
How serious would you say AO is about personal development?
Very. So where I've come from and what I do now, the opportunities are there. No one's going to give it you on a plate. If you prove yourself, you stand out, you have that can-do attitude, it'll definitely be noticed.
So can you give us some examples of how AO can invest in you in your own personal development?
Yeah, if you've got a suggestion of something that you want to do, you think will help customers and you can prove it with the numbers, they'll go for it and they'll look at doing it or they'll implement it. If you can find like a program that helps with your work or you need some extra training, so I really want to kind of go and learn how to do this, it'll help me in my job. They're all for that, for you to go and do it. You can get some qualifications done through work as well. Personal self-development, it's really encouraged.
So very much a company that's investing in you others.
Definitely. It's invest for the future.
In terms of advice to other people then about this can-do attitude, what sort of top tips would you give others in becoming more proactive?
I think a lot of the time you can get bogged down in detail and then you kind of lose the bigger picture of what you're trying to achieve. every once in a while you need to take a step back, review what is it that you're doing, why are you doing it. If you don't do that, you can end up going down a rabbit hole, or you need to remember what you're doing it for. Planning helps with that. If you make a mistake, it happens, but you learn from it to make sure it doesn't happen again. And one thing AO are really good at is, you know, if you've got a gut feeling on something, give it a go. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work, but at least now you know that that didn't work. And now you know that you can look at something else and try and improve it that way.
And when working in teams, how important is this attitude now of actually the ability to get things done, going out of the way to this can-do attitude?
Yeah, it's you've got your internal customers again, so you want to please them so they enjoy working with you. I'm quite competitive, so I want to prove myself that I can do a good job and not take my past performance for granted. Always want to be see that person that's like innovating and kind of just improving processes and performance as well. And hopefully that kind of reflects on some of the younger people that work at the company, because I'm not that young person anymore. So if I can try and influence people and their decision making and how they work, then that's great, because that helps the business.
I'm going to ask you some final questions now.
Okay.
What would you say is your most proactive time of the day?
Probably in the afternoon. I feel sometimes I have to get my brain ready in the morning and might have some daily work that goes out. And then in the afternoon, we can really start looking into new things and new ideas. When I'm on a roll with something, I've got a momentum that I've built up throughout the day. You want to kind of get something finished.
In the morning, you might have been putting out fires. In the afternoon, you put all your fires out, then you can actually get on with what you need to be done.
Yeah, I think in the morning, trying to understand the previous day's problems and where we're at. And then in the afternoon, you know what the issues may be, and then you can get on with fixing them.
And what would you say is your least proactive time of the day?
Probably first thing. That's where I want to kind of try and plan things. And you always need to be able to take on like ad hoc requests, but I want to kind of just get everything in order first, and then I can get going.
Would you say you're highly distracted in the morning because you've got so much coming at you?
Yeah, I want to look at the previous day and fully understand how it went. And once I've got that information, then I'm ready to take on new bits.
And how would you overcome procrastination?
So sometimes I'll go to the gym at work. So I'll go and do my treadmill sprints and switch my brain off on working. Sometimes when you stop thinking about something, you know, like you can think of the solution, so you can come back to work and you already know the answer.
It's clear that you've got a tremendous amount out of AO over the past 8 years, Ben. For anybody interested in joining AO, how would you best describe the company?
Yeah, it's a very fast-paced company. It's a great place to work, very fun, very friendly. I've been there for, like you say, 8 years, so a lot's changed since then, but they still have the core values, and I can't see that ever changing. And they're always taking on new challenges, so there's always kind of loads of stuff to get involved with. A variety of roles across the business as well, so there's kind of something for everyone.
And you've recently opened a new office in Manchester on Bridge Street.
Yeah, definitely. We've got quite a lot of sites as well. We own our own logistics company, so they've got a warehouse in Crewe, the site in Manchester, Parkland in Bolton, Germany and Netherlands as well. So there's just opportunities for everyone.
Ben, thanks ever so much for being with us on 12 Scholars. We wish you all success for the Ironman and say thank you very much.
Thanks, Bob.
That was Ben Grimes, one of those people who is always learning and improving. In this episode, we learned more about being proactive and how to develop a can-do attitude. Ben's advice is to put yourself out there. You learn more about yourself when you say yes to new challenges. Lead by example and constantly look for new ways of doing things. If you make a mistake or something happens, learn from it and move on. Every once in a while, step back and review what you're doing and why you're doing it. And remember, you're more resilient than you think, especially when there's no option to stop. To learn more about Ben and meet other inspiring people, visit our website at 12scholars.com and join a tribe dedicated to personal development. In other news, our first edition of the printed journal will be available this October. It's a stunning collection of insights and inspiration where we learn more about the guests we feature on this podcast. If you like this episode, write us a review and be sure to tell one of your friends. My name is Bob, and I look forward to joining you next time.